Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC sports. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. You're listening to the Inside Carolina podcast, sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt, JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Take a chance to rate us, review us, subscribe if you're on YouTube. Subscribe and get all these podcasts if you're on Apple Music or however you get your podcast brought to you. Tuesday means on the beat. That means I've got Ross Martin live on site, and I've got Greg Barnes straight off the golf course. Gentlemen, post Carolina losing the first game of the season, Greg, I'll start with you first, and then Ross, I want your opinion. How was the press conference? I listened to Longo and Bateman. I did not hear Max, but it seemed like it was quite a different vibe with those press conferences coming off a loss. Am I wrong there, Greg?
No, certainly so. You know, I think we kind of saw that out of Jay last week after the Virginia Tech game. You know, the first 2 weeks of the season, Carolina's defense looked great. And so he was chipper and very happy and a little bit sarcastic in some of his responses. And that was toned down dramatically after the Virginia Tech game and then again today. But I think both of the guys were very open and honest. They addressed some issues. They didn't run from anything. And so I think that's what you want to see. They acknowledge there were some mistakes, acknowledge there were things that they've got to improve upon. And that's really all you can ask. I mean, I keep going back, and Mac touched on this. But people who thought North Carolina was going to run through this season, possibly be undefeated, this team is not there yet. And there's really no evidence to suggest that they were. And so these losses are going to happen. Now, we can get into why it happened. But, you know, I think the coaching staff understands that things have to improve. They have to learn from each of these games. And the same could be said after each of the first three wins. And as long as you're making those improvements and acknowledging that you made mistakes and being honest with yourself and with the team and with the fan base, that's really all you can ask for.
I think we were kind of waiting for this game to happen, whether it was against Virginia Tech or against Florida State or some weird game, maybe against State or later on Virginia. But, I mean, we knew this wasn't a top five team. Mac admitted that today, maybe closer to a top 15 team. And they were exposed in a lot of different ways. They were exposed a little bit against Virginia Tech, and they were exposed against Florida State. And the mistakes, too many mistakes in the Florida State game to come back from. And we don't have as much talent as you would need defensively. And some places offensively, you're going to get a result like you got when you have a pick six, when you miss a field goal. Some maybe game time management mistakes, things like that. All those things kind of add up to a loss. And look, UNC could have won that game with all those things combined. So they know they're not that far off, even given their shortcomings in certain areas.
Yeah, that's a valid point. With everything that went wrong, still had a chance. If you had an opportunity to put the ball in Sam Howell's hand, down three against anybody in the nation, you'd take it. And Carolina had that opportunity. It just didn't work out. Greg, one thing that it continues to be a problem is special teams. And Mac did not sound pleased talking about special teams. I mean, you can say it's coached wrong or players made a mistake or whatever, but this is the potential to kill this team.
Wait, what happened on the block punts before Greg dives in? Do you know what happened on those block punts, Greg?
Yeah, Jason Staples actually put up something this afternoon that kind of really breaks it down, Ross. But it looks like on one there was a miscommunication, and then the other one, the second one, that which didn't hurt North Carolina that much, Florida State rushed two guys, and Marvin Wilson just made a great play. Tamon Fox was kind of blown up in the shield, and Wilson was able to get a hand on the kick. So that's a little bit of scheming, but you know, with Florida State only rushing two, you should win that one every time, and North Carolina didn't. Yeah. So It's one of those things, Tommy. You know, we talked about this last week, and I actually ran a story on it last week. Special teams has had significant issues all season long. I mean, it was an issue last year. And last week, when I asked Mac about it, he really kind of got to Javon DeWitt's defense, saying, look, you know, it's a new hire. He didn't have spring ball, didn't have maybe your traditional summer workout exposure that you can do. And so you're kind of playing catch-up from day one. And there's legitimacy in that. I mean, that's how this thing has played out. But I think when you talk about having to rely on so many young guys on your special teams, the fact that these keep popping up, I mean, we've talked about a significant special teams blunder in every game. So it does. It has to be fixed. And I think some of Mac's frustration is he likes what Javon is coaching up. He likes the schemes, the ideas. But I don't know that there's a quick fix. I think this is a slow work in progress type of deal. You try to hide it as best you can. But I mean, like today, Mac was talking about with the fair catches, for example, coaches are not going to say, hey, you need to fair catch this unless it's like a unique special situation in the game, like end of the game, you're trying to kill the clock. You don't want to do anything fancy. Just catch it, you know, take the fair catch and be done with it. But during the course of normal activities, those guys have to make that decision on their own. You have to trust them. And he said that, hey, you going back and looking at the film, maybe there was more room to run than what Daz or Michael thought. And maybe that's something we have to coach them up on. Did that hurt North Carolina? Possibly, because you're not allowed to use those guys' running ability in those situations. And so it's really – we're talking about very small things, minutiae, if you will. And so that's the challenge, is all these, you know, all these rounding things that you have to do, all this polishing that has to take place. It's just a gradual thing. Nobody likes to hear that. Nobody wants to hear that. Mac doesn't like to talk about it, but I think that's kind of where they are.
I mean, one thing that's clear, I mean, the field goal kicking game, Grayson Atkins is 2 for 5 on the season. He's 2 for 2 from between 30 and 39 yards. He's 0 for 2 on 40, between 40 and 49 yards. He's 0 for 1, 50 plus. I mean, we heard about his leg. Mac Brownlee says he's an All-American kicker from Furman, but I mean, he hasn't helped UNC at all, missing, you know, two kicks that you kind of expect, you know, on between 40 and 49, you would probably go 1 for 2 is what you expect from that. And, you know, he's 0 for 3 and field goals over 40. So they're losing trust in Grayson Atkins now. His confidence is probably pretty low, and that's when you get into even more issues and kind of compounds with kickers. So that's definitely not a positive moving forward, because they needed kickers last year and didn't have success in that area. They brought in a transfer to replace Noah Ruggles, and he's not getting the job done now. Grayson Atkins, that is.
Yeah, and so the other part of that too is not having. I'll project here. Not having full confidence in your field goal kicker, I think, played out at the end of the game, because North Carolina had, what was it? They had a 1st and 10 at the FSU 42.
Changed your play calling, right?
Right. They're with a minute to play. And so, you know, from the 41, that's what, a 58-yarder. So you're looking at, typically, if you have a good kicker that you trust, all you need is 10 yards there to get in the field goal range. If you can score a touchdown, fine. But you just need the 3 points to force overtime. And North Carolina was not playing just to get 10 yards, which says to me they felt they needed to get a lot closer. They needed to score a touchdown to win the game in regulation. And I think that's one of the byproducts of having some sketchy play on special teams.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll see Noah Ruggles, you know, see what happens with that, because Mac did not hesitate last year to switch kickers mid-game and mid-season.
Yeah, you're right. He certainly switched, maybe for less last season than what's going on. The thing about field goal kickers is most of them are all weird. But he's missed everything, Greg, the same way. I mean, if my memory serves, I know 2 of the 3 misses, he's hooked left. It seems like an easy fix. It's not like he's spraying the ball all over the place. Use your golf skills and tell him to play the hook.
Right. Yeah, and then what happens? You play the hook, and then you block one, block one outright.
Then you kick one off the stands over there on the right side. Let's move on down the line. Let's talk a little bit about the offense. And I, Ross, I'll come to you. You listened to Phil Longo today. It's sort of the same similar question that I had about overall, but I felt like watching North Carolina on offense, they wanted to do what they wanted to do. And they're not good enough to do that yet, I don't think. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, I mean, you want the balance. And Longo admitted that they ran the ball heavily in the first half and didn't, you know, pass the ball deep as much, didn't get the wide receivers as involved early. We talked off air about getting Garrett Walson more involved. That did not happen as much. And they went run heavy, and then they had to play catch up. And I think you could point to a lot of different errors, like the pick six, block punts that also put UNC at a disadvantage, not taking advantage of the interception by Trey Morrison. But, yeah, I mean, play calling's always hindsight's 20/20. You always want to kind of rethink it after. But I think when you have these wide receivers and you have a quarterback like Sam Howe, it has to be balanced because that just helps everybody. And when it wasn't clicking with the receivers, they couldn't move the ball very well, and the offense was very stagnant in the first half, I thought. Greg was there. He might have a little bit of a better idea about the play calling and how they used the skill players in the offense. So I'd love to hear what he has to say about this. But another thing is wide receivers. I mean, Diami Brown, Daz Newsome, and Bo Kraus played the vast majority of the game, and I talked about on the boards. They're not getting much from anybody else. Saw Antoine Green play a little bit more, Coffrey Brown, but like, where's Rontavious Groves? He just bypassed now. Where's Josh Downs guy we heard about so much? So they're leaning heavily on Brown, Newsome, and Corrales, and maybe that could have had some fatigue issues in the second half when they need to make plays and make catches when it mattered.
Greg, let me, before you chime in on that, being there, and Jason harps on this all the time about not being able to see the whole field on the television production. But for me, watching that game, it looked like the middle of the field was open a lot for North Carolina. Didn't take advantage of it. But what were we missing that maybe we couldn't see on the television as far as separation, anything like that with those wide receivers?
I don't know that you're necessarily missing a whole lot. I think we're four games in, and so we can kind of start to break down some of these problem areas for UNC. We've got the tape. Everybody has the tape on Sam Howell from last year. And when North Carolina was at its most dangerous, it was because he was completing deep vertical shots down the field. And what we have seen each and every week is that these defensive coordinators said, you know what, you're not going to beat as deep. And so what Florida State did is what a lot of these other teams have done, is that they're sending, you know, one or two safeties back. And so if Sam's going to throw a deep ball, it's going to be a challenge. I mean, if you look at some of his longest pass plays, they were two of them to Garrett Walston over the middle on those vertical routes. And then one was the touchdown to Javonte Williams. Those are not wide receivers. Those are guys who take advantage of their matchups, and Sam was able to find them. And so by Florida State taking away those deep balls, you kind of limit yourself some with that vertical passing game. And then as Ross mentioned earlier, North Carolina's issues on the offensive line, consistently Jordan Tucker and Marcus McKeithen have graded out very well on the right side. The rest of the line, Joshua Zudu didn't play great against FSU. You would think he kind of balances things out a little bit. But Brian Anderson's, you know, grades have not been great. And then Austin Richards had a great game against Syracuse, and his numbers have not been impressive since. And one of the byproducts of that is that North Carolina, as Phil Longo laid out, they've been good in run block. They've been pretty good with play action where you're faking the run. But when it's obvious passing down, when this is straight drop back, that's where UNC's offensive line has struggled the most, and that's been problematic. And so what FSU did was, okay, we're going to take away the deep pass, which Phil Longo utilizes the same mindset that Larry Fedora is if they're going to take away something, that's fine. We'll do something else. So that brings in the running game. And all FSU was trying to do was saying, look, we're going to take away the deep ball. We're going to try to get the third down. We're going to try to force an obvious passing down on third down, with me third and six, third and seven, whatever. And then we're going to take our chances getting after Sam Howell because we know he's going to have to pass on that play. UNC was 1 of 8 on third downs in the first half. And he also had the pick six and that little swing pass, which was, I think it was a little bit telegraphed. But that's what Florida State's plan was, and it worked. You tip your hat to him, and then Of course, FSU was able to score offensively, and the game really got away from UNC there at halftime.
And look, I mean, Solonga knows they need to work on pass protection. He mentioned that. He was asked about that, and he talked about in order for the deep passing game to work, you have to protect. And Sam is so much better when he obviously has time and can set his feet. He's not throwing the run. He has a couple seconds to make a good decision. So if you're going to have a team that relies on the passing game, you're going to have offensive line that can protect for that and maybe put another running back there, maybe another tight end, and go all out to make the deep passing game work. And obviously at times it did not work for UNC against Florida State.
Yeah, and Tommy, Ross mentioned a few minutes ago about Toe Groves and Josh Downs not seeing a lot of action. Right, we've talked a lot about this year about Daz Newsome not being enough of a presence on the offense. What position do those guys play?
All slot. The same thing.
Slot.
Same yep. position. And so that kind of gets to your point off the air, Tommy, that there is some availability over the middle. I mean, as I mentioned, you know, Walston and Javonte had those three big catches because Florida State's strength is in the secondary. But if you can get matchups over the middle with either a linebacker or one of those safeties coming up, you have to feel pretty good about those opportunities. And so, you know, that's one of the things that Longo is going to have to look into is that an area that he can exploit? And obviously he's looking at those kind of things, trying to figure that out.
Longo mentioned
having a lot of skeleton passing plays that are there and that are available, but you have to block well enough to give Sam Howell time to make those throws.
Yeah. Greg almost touched on that there with Longo. I mean, he mentioned just getting the ball out quick, you know, focusing a little bit more on that to getting it to your skill players with grass to run. And that's what the air raid is, but maybe some shorter routes with Daz, with Josh Downs, the Groves, just crossing plays. I mean, I remember some of the defenses under Larry Fedora's staff, I mean, crossing routes would just kill the defenses. I mean, if you can get Daz to get a little bit of separation and get him in space going across, I mean, that should be – a big part of your offense when you have those type of athletes and you have a quarterback who can make one read and go. I mean, that's football 101. I mean, I'm no offensive coordinator, but that seems like would be a great option for UNC when these deep plays aren't working.
Yeah.
Am I missing something there? Is that not been working? Has that not been happening?
I mean, specifically against Florida State, their linebackers were terrible. Their defensive line was good, but hadn't played well. And their secondary was stout. Like I said off the air, and I'll say it again, Garrett Walston should have had 7 or 8 catches for 150 yards. And that's why I thought Carolina would run Florida State out of the building, is because I thought they would do that over and over and over with Walston, with Javonte, with Michael Carter. And they didn't. I mean, they did it some. But, you know, we can talk about specific play calling. Going at Asante Samuel, Greg, on a fade route on 3rd and 3, that's just not – that can't happen. And so that's the one – that's the beef I have with the play call and a specific play call.
Yeah, and a couple things. Number one, I love the fact that Mac Brown is paying attention to the analytics. And he said, you know, if he's got really anything inside of 4th and 4, especially on the opponent's side of the field, he's going to go for it because that's what the analytics say. I love it. And so on 4th and 1 at the 25, what do you do? And, Tommy, we've been through this a lot with Fedora. If you've got a good back, if you've got Javonte Williams or Elijah Hood, 4th and 1, give him the ball. If they stop him, you tip your hat. And so I know a lot of people maybe didn't like the formation. End of the day, you gave Javonte the ball on a 4th and 1. You do it 10 times. The reason that play did not work, as Mac told us today, is because Florida State had better leverage, and they beat UNC off the ball. That's not a play call. That's execution. Now, with the third and 3, you know, against maybe an average cornerback, you can do that. And maybe even if you throw it to Bo, because Bo is a great athlete. He's long. He's tall. Maybe your odds are better there. But throwing it to Diami against Samuel, that's just not a high percentage play. And it looked bad from the start. So I'm traditional when it comes to that kind of thing and say, hey, you line up and you run it twice. But like Ross said, it's a lot easier to say this on Monday morning quarterback type deal, right? I mean, that makes it pretty easy. But, you know, the fact that they went for it, I don't think that's an issue. And there's always going to be some play calls that people don't like. But certainly that one more than most stood out to me as one that you probably love to have back.
Greg, what do you think Mac's analytics department looks like?
Oh, it could be great. I mean, you think Ken Browning and Sparky Woods are there crunching the numbers?
I don't think it's the old guys there that are his advisors. I wonder if it's some student, some volunteer student manager who's, you know, part-time analytics for, we'll see. So,
well, yeah, that's what it was with the baseball team, and that kid got right famous for doing that. Yeah, I mean, play calling is easy to nitpick. The thing about Javonte and Michael Carter, and I can't find the stats right now for the Florida State game specifically, but going into the game, they had negative 6 yards between them, like 6 yards lost between them going into the game. They lost that in the first quarter against Florida State. Just a different beast, Florida State's defensive line. Before I go to break, let's talk about the defense a little bit. Jay Bateman, like you mentioned early, Greg, Jay Bateman, little less chipper after these things, but he said something, and I want to get your take on it, that talking about Chaz Surratt. I mean, I don't know how you – I'm not sure how you balance the – if a team misses 19 tackles, that means guys were in the right spot, right? They just missed a tackle. But he talked about Chaz. Chaz just explodes to the ball and then misses a tackle. And he said you got to be – what did he use? What term did he use talking about attacking the football? Do you remember? Because I can't remember right this second. Freely admit.
It's a pace yourself to the ball.
There it is. And I thought it was a great quote.
I wrote it down. Okay.
Pace yourself to the ball. I think that is where Chaz has struggled a lot. He struggled mightily, especially trying to get Jordan Travis on the ground. How does he learn from that, Greg?
Just repetition. And, again, it goes back to the fact that, I mean, last year, yep. We've talked about this a lot right in the offseason. Why did Chaz have the great year he had last year? A large part of it was because he had two horses in front of him on the defensive line, made his job a lot easier.
Yeah.
Those guys are not there right now. And so he's having to work around traffic. And offensive linemen are keen on him. And that's exactly what Virginia Tech did. They were trying to – once the offensive lineman got off the line, they were trying to find him and trying to get him out of his angles that he wanted to take. And so he didn't have spring ball. He didn't have a lot of summer workouts that he typically would have. And so it's just a learning process. He's only been playing linebacker for really a year and a half now, probably less than that, with COVID and all those kind of things. So he's a great athlete. I think he has good instincts. But we saw it a lot last year. I mean, he had a ton of missed tackles last year for the same reason. He'd get to a play and he'd overrun it just a hair. And against – as Max said, against good quality offensive playmakers, you better get there square and you better get there hard. And if you're not doing it both, then you're going to have some issues in terms of bringing the guys down. The fact that Florida State's quarterback broke six tackles, you give him a lot of credit for that. But that's also on UNC's defenders not being able to bring him down.
You're certainly seeing Surratt scheme for. I mean, everybody knows who he is now. He's been on every preseason watch list. Last year, I mean, Mac Brown was super worried about him entering the South Carolina game. So every offense coordinator knows who he is, wants to know where he is, and then they're scheming for that. I think what we're seeing now on defense, we can get more into this after the break, but I don't think UNC has the athletes and the talent this year on defense. I just think there's a pretty big gap from where they want to be. It's not really an elite pass rusher. The defensive line is not elite at all. Vohasek and Fox are good. I don't know if they're excellent. They're good. Maybe above average, but behind them, there's not much at all, and we can see that by the snap counts. They don't trust anybody else but those two. Jewel Taylor played 10 snaps, so you've seen how much they really rely on him. There's some secondary. There's some players in the secondary, but they have some depth issues now as well. So I think we're really seeing the talent gap after losing Strobridge and Crawford and the lack of pass rush and really elite players in the defensive line, which UNC should get, I think, one or two years when those freshmen and sophomores develop.
Yeah, we'll talk about the talent issue all year, I'm sure, but he's got to piece it together. Greg, did they have any idea, like Greg, if you're watching on YouTube, Greg partaking. Greg, did
I am ready. Fire.
Did they have any idea that Trey Morrison would be as good as he's been?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean,
the staff.
Yeah, the staff. I mean, this kid has played unbelievably, at least from my eyes.
Yeah, you know, in training camp.
Go ahead, Greg. Sorry.
Go ahead, Ross.
I just think it'd be interesting to ask Don if Don knew how good he was going to be too, because look at his recruiting profile. I mean, he's the number 69th ranked athlete, number 808 nationally. So this guy wasn't – I mean, he was a lower tier three-star. So not certainly not a big-name recruit. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah. Well, and his freshman year played nickel, obviously, and as much praise as Patrice Rene got that year, Morrison graded out higher than Rene did. And so I think we kind of saw from the beginning that the kid was talented. Last year was interesting because you talking to Mack Brown, he mentioned numerous times about how Trey's size was a concern because he's not a big kid. But that seemed like that was really the only concern they had with him playing the nickel slot. But, I mean, the fact that he's a guy, given the injuries in the secondary and the attrition, I mean, they can play him anywhere. He's played corner, he's played nickel, he's played safety. And not only that, but he's really good. And one thing Jay Bateman said is, and this is one of the intangibles that you can't really see when you're talking about talent scouting, right? You can see how tall a guy is and how good his hips are and all those kind of things. But Jay said that during the game, they didn't like how Trey defended one particular play, and they told him. And after that, it was never an issue again. And a similar play is what he got his interception on. So the fact that he's a smart guy, they can say, look, you need to do this instead of this. He does it immediately. I mean, that's a blessing to have a guy like that in secondary. And, I mean, Trey, we heard a lot in training camp about how Trey was having the best camp of anybody defensively. And that's played out thus far on the field.
He loves football. I mean, I just remember, like, he just loves – we asked him if he was going to opt out, if there's any idea if he wanted to opt out. It's just a kind of a basic question back in August, September. He goes, no. I mean, if there's football to be played, I'm going to play it. I mean, this guy loves football, eats, drinks, sleeps football, and Bateman freaking loves him too. The love affair with Trey Morrison.
Ross, do you think Trey likes football more or doing media interviews more?
Yeah, he's definitely a better defensive back than he is a media question answerer. All right, guys. Tommy has given me the reins for the Johnny T-shirt read. I went hiking yesterday in Colorado. My hands got cold. You know what I needed? Gloves. Ears were getting cold. You know what I needed? Toboggan, a hat. I need multiple layers. I wish I had like a long sleeve UNC shirt, a sweatshirt, and a jacket. You know, I can get all those things for winter weather. Johnny T-shirt, GiantT-shirt.com. Get all your gear. It's getting colder here. It's getting colder in Chapel Hill. Get a nice sweatshirt. Get a nice hat. Get a nice gloves. Go to GiantT-shirt.com or in store on Franklin Street, Johnny T-shirt. Use the 10% off discount code and shop for all their UNC gear, UNC needs, tailgating stuff, anything you need for your friends and family. Johnny T-shirt and GiantT-shirt.com. Their support of us helps us do these podcasts, which obviously gives you great content, great things to listen to. So support them. If you're going to buy Christmas gifts, birthday gifts, engagement gifts, all that stuff, go to Giant T-shirt and make the purchases. Tell them Inside Carolina sent you and use that 10% off discount code only available to Inside Carolina subscribers. How's that, Tommy?
Hey, man, you were born to read, born to add now, read.
And now we're going to go to some national ads. We'll be back to talk about NC State this weekend.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
We're back. On the Beat podcast, Ross Martin. I was about to let Ross take it over fully.
That's right.
And I was going to check out. We got Greg Martin, Ross Barnes. I'm your host, Tom. Ross Barnes.
Greg Martin.
Ross Greg Martin. Martin. Greg Martin. Stop. I'll get tickled in this over. Guys, we got a big ball game coming up for North Carolina this weekend, noon on Saturday. I think it's on ESPN now. I think they made that move.
Yeah, 12 o'clock.
NC State and North Carolina. Ross, you going to be back in town for this one?
Yep. All in.
Hey, all in. So, Greg, State loses their quarterback. Had been playing well, loses their quarterback, Bailey Hockman, who has not played really well, but obviously has some talent. How does North Carolina bounce back? What's the mindset this week in practice? They always say, you know, you leave the past behind. Does it really happen for a young team that was fifth ranked last week?
That's the great question for this week is – you, this is their first real disappointment of the year. And you've got to be able to bounce back and you got to be able to forget it. You know, coaches always talk about whether it's a win or a loss. You know, take the rest of the day on Saturday, you got till midnight, enjoy it, live it up, pout, cry, whatever you need to do to get over the game. And on Sunday, you have to flip the script. And that's really what the coaching staff is going to be paying attention to this week. And Mac brought up a good point. I mean, if you look at North Carolina's next 4 weeks, they're all rivalry games. I mean, it's NC State, it's Virginia, it's Duke, it's Wake Forest. And so you really have this situation where you have to help the team peak emotionally each week to get up for these games, because all four of those teams want to whoop UNC's rear end, right? But you can't have them operating at a high clip emotionally the entire time. So you really have to kind of dial back the gas a little bit, and then as you get closer to the game time, rev it up some more. And that's a challenge, and that's something that the coaching staff has to do. That's something that the team leaders have to do, which will be difficult. And so I think it's really an emotional test more than anything. I mean, Baylor Hockman's fine. I mean, you know, Devin Leary, the turnaround that he has had has been tremendous. So I hate to see that kid out. I think that would have been a great game if he played. North Carolina's going to be a pretty big favorite. But, you know, NC State is probably going to do what Florida State did, which is be very physical. North Carolina did not appear ready for that physicality on Saturday. We know that's what Dave Doran is going to get his guys to do, especially guys like Peyton Wilson back there. So you have to be emotional. You have to be tough. And then if you match NC State in those areas, then I think the talent takes over.
Greg, were you surprised that Jay Bateman was raving about Bailey Hockman?
No, not at all.
Pretty funny. Yeah, that's all I got, Tommy.
Well, you want me to go to Greg then? Greg, you mentioned the physicality of it. I mean, that was an issue when Larry Fedora was at North Carolina. NC State pushed Carolina around other than a couple times. But last season, Carolina had the best of State, so – do you think there's any concern in the coaching staff worrying about the players being ready, especially after coming – because Florida State, you go back and watch the trenches in that game, Florida State whipped North Carolina quite a bit. So did Virginia Tech on the defensive side or their offensive line on Carolina's defense. I mean, after 2 weeks, I can't imagine these guys haven't learned that now we're in the heart of ACC football and this is how it's going to be.
Yeah, you would think they would know that. But we'll have to see. I think having Azudu back does solidify the offensive line. I know they weren't exactly great against FSU, but to be fair, FSU's defensive line played better than they had all year long. So give them credit for that. I don't know how much of a role that played, but clearly it played some. And so you have to coach up the toughness aspect. I think, as Ross said, the defensive line this year it's adequate. It's not special. And so State's going to do what they can to take the ball out of Hockman's hands as much as they can, mm-hmm. And really run the ball. And by doing that, you've got some good backs. Donovan Knight's had a great year. You can not only move the ball in that regard, but that also runs out some clock, and that limits the opportunities for Sam Howell to take the field. I think that's what you're going to see with NC State. And then again, kind of like what Florida State did, if you can limit the deep passing plays and you can get a couple situations where you're in obvious passing downs, then you can get after Howell. I mean, there's an opportunity there for State to have success. And that's kind of where you get to. If you're tough on those opening downs offensively, and you can grind out some yardage and get into a third and three or third and four, all of a sudden that's not an obvious passing down, and you've got a lot of options. I do think North Carolina's going to have to score points. So that side of the ball is kind of a key component. Is how well does that offensive line hold up? Because I do think State's defense is going to be stout. It's going to be tough. But I think their offense and their ability to run the ball is going to be a kind of a bigger issue for UNC overall.
I think if you step back, you know, all the X's and O's stuff, and there's a couple storylines here you want to look at. I mean, State's riding high. I mean, well, they've won the last four, right? Yeah, so they're top 25. They're riding high. And they feel pretty good about themselves. And now UNC's coming off a loss. So, you know, what's the psychology there? They're probably going to have a pretty good week of practice. They didn't have any injuries against Florida State. So they're healthy, you would think, other than probably some you know, bruises and nicks and whatnot. So they're going to be at full strength pretty much other than Storm Duck. It's a good week of practice. And then you have this kind of in-state rivalry factor. I mean, there's tons of guys on State's roster that UNC passed over. And that's going to be what the coaches are going to tell them. They're going to tell them that you got passed over by UNC. Play like that, you know, use that as motivation, you know, whatever it takes to motivate them. Then you have some players that obviously pick State over UNC. Peyton Wilson, Ali McNeil, some of their better defenders, some of the people in the defensive line. And then you have this whole Diamond Dave, hand in the dirt mentality, blue-collar mentality, and that happens in the trenches. So you're going to have the run game, which Greg mentioned, which is a weakness for UNC, defending the run, which is a strength for NC State. And then on the other side of the ball, you know, I think there's definitely some players on NC State's defensive line which can probably beat some of the players on UNC's offensive line. I mean, Ali McNeil, I had no idea he was that big when I saw him take that pick six in, or it was a fumble or one of those two. I mean, he's massive. I remember him. He wasn't above 300 when he was a recruit. He was more of like a 280 type guy. I mean, he looks about 330. So they got some guys now, and they're a lot better than I think a lot of people thought. I think a lot of fans and media went to this season thinking, you know, they might have to get to four or five wins to just save Diamond Dave's job. But now, four wins, riding high, top 25 team, and they're going to be one of the hunted now. So a lot of interesting kind of fan media dynamics without getting too into the nitty gritty there. That's what I hope to provide you time with there, Tommy.
Yeah, it was good.
That's good stuff. So a couple things. Number one, I mean, if we go back to 2018 in North Carolina's bad year there that welcomed in Mack Brown, the talking point that whole year, including the year prior, was injuries for North Carolina. And so we talked about when Mack was hired – how things were set up for him to have a good year in his first year, because he's getting a lot of those guys back. And they weren't going to have near as many injuries to deal with. And that's what we saw. Now, what was the difference? Sam Howell. I mean, you've got a legit quarterback that comes in and is great. So you get guys healthy, you get a quarterback in there, all of a sudden you're a good team. Well, what happened to State last year? They were decimated with injuries, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And then Leary. You credit him for the offseason that he had. But now you've got your defense back because everybody's healthy, and you've got a quarterback. It's the same thing that happened for UNC last year. Now you lose Leary, so that changes things a little bit, but kind of the same arc. The other thing, too, is we talked this offseason about 2020 more than any other year. We're not going to know who's good until we get into the season. And so you look at Wake Forest, and State beats Wake in week two, 45-42, we're like, Wake stinks. They're not any good. Well, what happened to them in week one? They lost 37-13 to Clemson, which looks like a pretty good score right now, given how good Clemson is. And then you look at State being 4-1, and what Wake – I mean, Wake just laid it on Virginia last weekend. So Wake looks pretty good now, better than a lot of people thought. To Ross's point, State looks a lot better. I mean, that was a big win over Wake. They beat Pitt, who I think is a pretty good team, even though they struggled. So we're just now learning who the good teams are. And I think right now State's earned the right to be in that discussion. Losing their quarterback certainly hurts, though.
And, look, they're going to want to get revenge from what happened last year, too. I mean, there's just so many motivational factors here for NC State. I mean, Peyton Wilson probably hates Carolina for how much he's been blasted on Twitter by guys like Tommy going in and talking junk to him on Twitter.
Not me. I don't talk junk about 18, 19-year-old kids. I save that for we've got ones that handle that. bringing up that, over under, Greg, on how many shots Sam Howell takes.
Oh. He's taking some hard hits this year.
Look, I tweeted it when it happened. That is one tough SOB. Yeah. I mean, you can say what you want about his quarterbacking skills. He's better. He's tougher than he is a good quarterback.
Yeah. And, I mean, what has State done over the years? I mean, they knocked Brent Leonard out of the game.
Yep.
They went after Marquise. That's kind of what they do. And, I mean, to be fair, would never encourage dirty play. But if you want to have a chance to beat North Carolina, you make Sam Howell feel it.
Yep. Florida State did it.
Yep. That's right. And so State will do that in terms of cheap shots. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, the fact that Justin Fuente defended Dax Holyfield after a two-hand shove to Sam's head when he's kneeling at the end of the game kind of speaks to what some coaches believe should take place. And we'll have to wait and see how the Wolfpack handle that.
What about the line? The line's what, 18?
Yeah.
That's insane, isn't it?
It is, and I think that's that's a couple of things. Number one, it's Carolina coming off a loss. It's Leary getting hurt.
Yeah.
That seems like easy money to me right now.
Take State. State in the points.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's open at 18, down to 16.5, 16 in some books.
UNC is 1-2 as double-digit favorites this year, and that one was a backdoor cover against Syracuse.
Yeah, what were they favored against Florida State? 13.5. Mm-hmm. A lot of people took a bath on that one. It's been On the Beat podcast, hosted or sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Hosted by me, Tommy Ashley, Ross Martin, and Greg Barnes. Inside Carolina beat writers have joined me. Hope you all enjoyed it. And Greg, Ross, I hope you all enjoyed joining me.
Yep, this is Greg Martin signing out. And Ross
Greg
Barnes,
Martin, and
enjoy
Ross
your
Barnes.
Time in Colorado.
Call me RB.
I'm John Siegley. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus.
Magical!
Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.